Greetings, and welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussion conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Lori Mayer. Thank you, Ms. Mayer. You may begin.
Thank you, Doug. Good evening, everyone. My name is Lori Mayer. I'm Director of Medical Research Services for the MS Clinic of Central Texas, which is in Austin, Texas. And on behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair for this program, I'd like to welcome you again to Town Hall Discussion. Tonight's program is entitled When the Patient is Non-Adherent, Strategies for the MS Nurse. These educational sessions are held by telephone on the third Tuesday of each month, and each discussion is led by an IOMSN member who volunteered to speak on a selected topic for about 15 minutes, which then we will follow by an open discussion. We'll limit that to 1 hour. We would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Biogenidec for supporting the project through an unrestricted educational grant. Thank you, Biogenidec. So we begin our town hall discussion this evening with Diane Loudon. Diane is a clinical nurse specialist in the MS program of the Montreal Neurological Hospital in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. She's an assistant professor at McGill University, which is also in Montreal, and a past president of the IOMSN. Currently, she is co-chairing the Communications and Website Committee for the IOMSN, and in addition, she is an honorary lifetime member of the United Kingdom Multiple Sclerosis Specialist Nurses Association. Please join me in welcoming Diane for this evening's meeting. Diane, I'm turning the meeting over to you.
Great. Thanks very much, Lori. I'd like to thank you and Jan for sure for sponsoring or for organizing these sessions, and also for IOMSN for having the vision to put this together, but certainly our sponsor, Biogenidec. I'd like to thank them for their generous sponsorship. And I'd like to welcome all the nurses online this evening. I recognize that some people probably have various degrees of involvement with patients on therapy, but I think that all of us have a role in contributing to ensuring and enhancing adherence to treatments for multiple sclerosis. But I think I wanted to start off by just looking at really what is the problem. And the issue is that up to 50% of patients don't persist with treatment in all disease categories. So we're not alone here in our care of patients with MS. But we do know that up to 20 to 30% of patients with MS discontinue treatment in the first 6 months. And, you know, the sort of famous saying is that drugs don't work in patients who won't take them. So this continues to be an ongoing preoccupation for those in the field. But we have about 25 years of research on patient compliance and treatment adherence. A while ago when I looked on Medline, there was like over 38,000 articles on adherence. So I think we have to question, are we any further ahead? I think we are, and I think there are some things that we have learned along the way. So briefly, this evening I wanted to just talk a little bit about what we know about adherence to disease-modifying therapies for MS, to review some of the patient, nurse, and drug-related factors associated with that, and also to consider some strategies that may help to ensure medication adherence. And when we're talking about adherence, sometimes we use adherence and compliance and persistence, but it's really to the degree to which a person's behavior, whether it be taking medication or following a diet, really corresponds with agreed-upon recommendations from a healthcare provider. One of the dilemmas certainly we know about in MS is that treatment is often recommended soon after the diagnosis. And we know our patients are having a lot of stress and anxiety at that time. And it's difficult for patients to know and understand what to expect, both in relation to MS, but also in relation to treatment. And I don't know about the U.S., but certainly in Canada, there's been a trend towards shared decision-making by giving patients more participation in treatment choice. But even with this increased involvement, we know that about 19% of patients stop therapy within the first 6 months, and 30% discontinued after 5 years. So some of the reasons that people gave for stopping was certainly in the short term with the injectable therapies, side effects were a big issue, whereas after about the six-month mark, people were really talking about lack of efficacy. They weren't getting better or they were getting worse. We also know that there's some sociocultural factors such as race, There was one study that suggested that whites adhere more than African Americans, older rather than younger, and higher income groups rather than lower income groups. So it doesn't mean that these different groups won't adhere, but I think it's something for us to be aware of. So we know that adherence is influenced by side effects, perceptions of whether the treatments are working or not, maybe some socioeconomic factors, and that people just get injection fatigue. They're tired of remembering, and they're tired of taking their injections. So I'm hoping we can have a little bit of a discussion later on about the Gilenya experience, because you're a little bit further ahead than we are in Canada. So I think there's three sides to the story that may actually improve adherence: patient factors, nurse factors, and factors related to the medication itself. Now, one of the things that I always ask my patients when they have been prescribed a medication for their MS is really try to get at what their readiness and motivation is to actually start on treatment and remain on treatment. One patient I had a number of months ago, she came into my office. The doctor asked me to go over the sort of procedure for getting her started on an injectable medication. And my first question to her was, I asked her what she thought when the doctor told her that she was eligible for a disease-modifying therapy, and she just said, I'll never take that medication. So the doctor had given her a prescription. He thought they had agreed upon, you know, a strategy to move forward. But when I explored it, it really found that she had a fear of a prior cancer, and she had a fear that maybe the new medication would interact with some other medications that she was taking. I'm not quite sure where this came from, but I think that this is where it starts. What patients think about treatment and what the role of treatment is in terms of meeting their goals and keeping them healthy is really important to look at right off the bat. If they don't believe the medication will contribute to their health, they may start, but they may not stay on treatment. Obviously, patient knowledge about MS and about the medications are very important. I think we need to look at the disease evolution and the role on treatment, and all of this sort of subclinical activity in the face of the lack of signs and symptoms of the disease. Obviously, the different types of medication, their administration and side effects, we need to cover in detail, as well as some skills training in self-injection technique. So we need to do this at the start, but we also need to be doing this in follow-up. We need to review and reinforce this information over time. A lot of the people who develop injection site reactions or who drop off treatment, when I go back and really sort of explore this with them, you know, so they've either forgotten some of the information or they haven't been injecting properly. So we need to kind of go over this medication again. But I think we also need to recognize that education is only beneficial if there's a knowledge deficit. So if sometimes I think we think that if they only knew what we know, they would make the same choices about starting and staying on treatment. So if patients are reluctant to continue, giving them more information isn't necessarily the way to go. I think that we need to really explore in a lot more detail what's going on. Certainly, as I mentioned before, there's a lot of sort of strategy to involving the patient in the choice of therapy as much as possible. And I think that there's a goal there to help them choose a treatment that will fit into their daily lives and work schedule as much as possible, and to minimize disruption and make therapy convenient to start, but also to maintain. So in other words, we want to keep things easy for people. We want to have them be able to plan for weekends and travel, ensure that there's no disruption to prescription renewals or medication delivery, and maybe to devise some medication diaries to help them keep track. So I think a lot of the companies have been very good at the patient education materials that they've produced, and I think a lot of them are developing more apps for cell phones, for iPads, in order to help people have triggers and reminders about starting and staying on therapy. Certainly, I think we need to also look at people's expectations over time. At the start, I talked about some studies that had looked at not only what expectations are at the beginning, but after they've been on treatment for a number of months, I think we really need to revisit that. I think sometimes we tend to look at side effects as we're talking with people at each visit, and I think that we need to kind of go beyond that and be checking in about their perceptions of efficacy and how they're feeling the medication is kind of working for them. And I think finally, in terms of other patient factors, really engaging the family and other support systems at the start of treatment and in an ongoing way. I think we need to make sure that patients have access to the healthcare team as well as the specific therapy support programs. I know that's been a lifesaver for us. When Betaseron first came on the market over 15 years ago, I understand that the patient support program had 25,000 calls in the first year, so that's way more calls than I would be able to handle in my center. So we have really relied on the local telephone and patient support programs to encourage patients to share difficulties and to find solutions to problems. I think with the younger population, we're seeing more and more use of the online chat groups that are devoted to treatment issues, and that people are really seeking the advice of peers. And sometimes more, they count more on the advice of peers than they do with us. So I think making these sites available, coaching people on how to use them, I think can really be very important. I think there's multiple intervention strategies, therefore, that nurses can really be using. I think we're in a unique position with patients in that we have a very long-term trusting relationship with patients. I think that we need to be collaborating with respect for patients' beliefs and wishes and goals and values, and really identifying barriers to adherence, but also really promoting the more positive factors towards staying on treatment. Dr. Barak, who's a psychologist or psychiatrist in Israel, had really talked about not only focusing on barriers to adherence, but focusing on facilitators and engaging family strengths and offering commendations. So I think we want to focus on the positive, but also recognizing that people may have a possible depression and some cognitive changes that may influence their ability to start on treatment and stay on treatment over time. Certainly we know some of the medication factors that may make treatment a little bit more difficult, some of the side effects with both the interferons and glatiramer acetate, and now we have some other therapies that may have some unknowns regarding risk and side effects over time. I'll be very interested to hear, as I mentioned, the experience about the oral agents, because I think they're attractive because of the route of administration. But I think that we need to balance this benefit with those patients who are really doing well on therapies. One patient I had recently said he really didn't want to switch because he felt he was doing well. So I think the full extent of the safety issues will emerge over time. And I think the question that we can raise is there really greater adherence to the oral agents, and do we need to be as vigilant? And I think probably not, in terms of there's probably not as great or better adherence with the oral agents. Some of the studies on the oral agents for diabetes and mental health disorders and chemotherapy suggest that they also have equal challenges in getting people to stay and to start and stay on treatment. So in summary, I think there's different side effects that we have to deal with. I think we have to look at the impact of therapies on the entire lifestyle of the patient, and there may be different degrees of monitoring required. Certainly, there's a changing treatment landscape that we need to, as nurses, to be keeping informed about and helping to patients to keep up to date as well. And I think that there will be a greater role for nurses in the future, both about education, decision support, monitoring and following up, and finding creative ways to help patients stick to their therapies. So I certainly would like to hear from you, and just wondering if there's any questions that we might want to open up to and continue on the discussion.
Okay, thank you, Diane. That was wonderful. You brought up some excellent, so many factors that affect adherence and so many different strategies. And I think that you're absolutely right. Our job as nurses is expanding as the therapies are expanding. It definitely is. So we'll wait for a minute and hopefully we'll get some questions in queue. I did want to ask you one question.
Mm-hmm.
That was a topic of discussion at the consortium, which is up in Montreal this year.
Mm-hmm.
Canada did get approval for the Avonex auto-injector mm-hmm. or the Avonex pen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you have it on the market yet.
We do. It's just out.
It just started.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel? How significantly do you think that this Avonex pen may impact the patient adherence? What do you think?
Well, I think it could have a tremendous impact for Avonex. I think one of the things with Avonex that certainly I've seen over time is kind of that injection fatigue. And for whatever reason, I don't know whether it's just injection in general or whether it's the IM injection, but people do tend to get injection fatigue over time. And either they stop being able to administer the medication themselves, or it seems to take an extraordinary amount of time to actually give the medication. This is such a nice device. It's easy to load up. It's easy to administer the medication. They don't see the needle. They see the needle when they withdraw it from the skin, but before that time, it's very hidden. So we've had a lot of interest in that, actually. We've had a lot of patients calling and requesting a switch to the Avonex pen. I think some of the other injection devices for the subcutaneous injectables were a great leap forward, and I think this is the best thing that I've seen in a long time regarding injectable therapies. So I think this is going to make a huge difference for sure.
I agree with you. I think when the auto injectors came on the market, it just made the injection process so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see that too with the Avonex pen. Okay, so Doug, do we have a question in the queue?